Kia ora. This program is brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard.
The Quilt of Bananas program plays every Sunday, 10 to 11am, with news, views and music.
A collective of presenters, advertisers, community events and discusses news of interest to lesbians, queer women and non-binary folk.
We have interviews about past and future sports and cultural events, politics, films, art shows.
The program is sponsored through the generosity of the Rural Foundation.
And it plays every Sunday from 10 to 11am on Wellington Access Radio, 106.1 FM.
Kia ora e te whanau. My name's Ro, and I hope to be your favorite transbian auntie. Or at least, that's how I introduce myself on the internet. I'm a new presenter here with the Quilted Bananas radio outfit, and I thought I would start by telling you a bit about myself. If you missed my interview last time, I am an asylum seeker, I am a transgender woman, and I am from the United States. I don't want to drag this into a lot of politics, so I'll just leave it at that. Last time I was on the radio, I talked a little bit about this playlist that I have, that I call my roadmap. When a couple years back, before my transition, I was reorganizing my music files, like digital audio enthusiasts do, right? And out of nowhere, a couple songs that I'd been listening to most of my life, really, were starting to hit different, starting to make me tear up. One of them even started to make me cry. And so what I did was put all those on a playlist, excuse me, and kept listening to that over and over again until I figured out why. And ultimately, you know, that led to my egg cracking, as we say in the trans community, and here I am now. So I thought I would take some time, tell some stories about why I have these particular songs on this particular playlist, and share them with you. So we start all the way back in the 80s. I was born in 1981 in Huntsville, Alabama. The only fun fact I know about Huntsville is that it's where the NASA space camp is. Have you ever seen kids playing on like mock space shuttles? That's where that's at. I was born down there because my father was a Marine at the time. He was dishonorably discharged later. We'll talk about that. Moved up to Pennsylvania not long after I was born. That's the state with the city of Philadelphia, for those unfamiliar. And that's where I spent my entire life until I left the United States and came down here to New Zealand. And boy, do I prefer it down here. But going back, my parents split when I was very young, but my mother was always incredibly supportive of me and who I was. She told me my whole life that she'd always wanted a little girl, but she got me instead. Might have taken me 40 years, but I did grant her request. And when I was little, I remember I had bright blonde hair, and I still have very curly hair when it's short. So, of course, everybody that saw this small child with the bright blonde curly hair assumed I was a girl. And my mother rarely did much to correct people unless it actually came down to it. And like I said, she always supported me. She didn't try to, excuse me, she didn't try to macho me up or anything. And one of the earliest, most affirming memories I have of my mother is a mixtape that she made for me. She worked nights for a while when I was little, and I had a Teddy Ruxpin, if anybody is old enough to remember those, was a little stuffed animal bear, though he wasn't very soft because he had a tape player and a speaker inside him. And you could put little storybook tapes in and read along with the book, and that was the intended product. But since I had the bear, my mom made me a mixtape. I'm about five, so this is about 1986 when she makes me this tape. And she puts on all kinds of songs that I like, which is mostly, at that time, Madonna and Cyndi Lauper. You know, like all the other, quote, young boys running around in the mid-80s. So I'm going to start us off with a song from Madonna. And that's going to be Lucky Star off of her debut album from 1983. And this was the first track that my mom put on that tape. And she used to tell me she did that because she called me her little Lucky Star.
Shine.
Oh, wow. Sorry for the dead air there. I had turned on the wrong microphone. This is my first day trying to run the board, and I clicked on the wrong thing, or I slid the wrong slider, I should say. Anyway, that was Madonna, 1983, with Lucky Star. You can imagine the reaction of most of my family members when I was bopping around my bedroom, rocking out to that track. All the women in my family really saw that I was not like most of the men that they'd ever known. I remember my mother's cousin, whom, of course, I just referred to as my cousin as well. She was pretty close to my mom, so we used to hang out with her. And she always told me that her first memory of me, I was about 4, and my mom had taken me over to her house, and I was hanging out, doing my thing. And then they noticed that they couldn't hear me anymore. Anybody that's been a parent or had to care for a small child knows that sometimes silence is not what you want. So they went to investigate. And didn't they find me in Kelly's bedroom, covered in her makeup? I had just found my way in there and started to make myself pretty. Many years later, after I came out and reconnected with my cousin there, she reminded me that that was her oldest memory of me, and that it it really tracked with where I was at the time. And just, I was always much more comfortable around women in general and the women in my family. My father, who I'll get there, he was no small part of that. But I just always preferred the company of women. And I feel like women were always the ones to see me more authentically than the men in my life. And that leads me to the second song that I'm playing from my mom's mixtape. This is Cyndi Lauper's seminal classic, True Colors, from 1986. This song always hit me, and I wasn't sure why until, of course, I figured it all out. So here we go with Cyndi Lauper's True Colors. And that was Cyndi Lauper with True Colors. So at this point in my life, I'm around 6 or 7 years old. It's the late 80s now. And as I was saying, I mentioned my dad a couple times. He definitely knew I was not the son that he was expecting. We had a lot of conflict over it. I remember a particularly silly incident. He wanted me to join the Boy Scouts. I was not interested in joining the Boy Scouts. This man drug my mother and I into a courtroom and attempted to make a judge force my mother to put me in the Boy Scouts. The judge didn't like my father. We'd been in there multiple times. And he looks at me and he goes, "Do you want to be in the Boy Scouts?" And I said, "No." So he looks back at my father and he says, "I'm not going to order a child into an extracurricular activity that they don't want to do." And he was very salty about that. Later, the next time I was visiting with him, he brought it up again that, you know, he'd really like it if I were to join the Boy Scouts. And I said to him, "Well, you know, the Boy Scouts don't really do anything that I'm interested in. I would join the Girl Scouts if they let me." That went over about as well as you would expect. He was quite irate at that point. And this is when his interactions with me and his overall behavior really started to change. One of the things that I noticed most was music. There were songs that he used to like that he decided I liked too much and stopped listening to. Madonna and Cyndi Lauper are definitely part of that, as well as the next track I'm going to play, which is Paula Abdul's Forever Your Girl from 1988. And the reason this one really stuck in his craw is because I was singing along. The lyrics, "I'm forever your girl," he did not appreciate coming out of the mouth of his, quote, son. But we'll see if you can appreciate it all the way back from 1988. This is Paula Abdul with Forever Your Girl. Wait, hold on.
Hey, baby, you got to remember. Hey, baby, you got to remember. Ever, you know I am.
Okay, so that was Paula Abdul with Forever Your Girl from 1988. I was 7 years old when that album was released, and that was the first tape at the time that I went and said to my mom, I want this person's music. And of course, I started listening to it. I reckon to this day, I can probably still sing the whole album cover to cover, because that is always something that I was into, singing. Especially once I started getting into musicals, which is where I'm going to segue now, because I've got three more entries from musicals from back in the day that, like the other tracks, they stuck with me. The first is from Little Shop of Horrors. If anybody hasn't seen this, it's a very quirky little musical. It's about a nerdy plant guy who gets this alien plant, and he has to wind up feeding it people. But there's a character, and her name's Audrey, and she is kind of down on her luck as far as men go and her relationships and everything. And there's a line in her big song, which is the one I'm going to play, but I'm going to say it so that y'all will know exactly what I'm talking about. The line goes, "Suddenly Seymour, he purified me. Suddenly Seymour showed me I can learn how to be more the girl that's inside me." And she belts this out in the song. And I belted that out for 20 years, 25 years, singing along. And it never locked in that specific, the girl that's inside me. And then during the musical review that led to the construction of this playlist, boy, did that line have a lot of weight. I would say it put some serious cracks in my shell. The next track will be the one that finally cracked it. But for now, we're going to play Suddenly Seymour from the Little Shop of Horrors soundtrack from 1986.
Lift up your head, wash off your mascara. Here, take my Kleenex, wipe that lipstick away. Show me your face, clean as the morning. I know things were bad, but now they're okay. Suddenly Seymour, standing beside you. You don't need no makeup, don't have to pretend. Suddenly Seymour is here to provide you sweet understanding. Seymour's your friend.
Nobody ever treated me kindly. Daddy left early, Mama was poor. I meet a man and I follow him blindly. He'd snap his fingers at me. I'd say, sure.
Suddenly, Seymour is standing beside me. He don't give me orders. He don't condescend. Suddenly, Seymour is here to prove. Till forever. Tell me the bad times are clean washed away.
Please understand that it's still strange and frightening.
For losers like I've been, it's so hard to say.
Suddenly Seymour,
Seymour,
show me I can.
Yes, you can.
that was Suddenly Seymour from hit musical Little Shop of Horrors, all the way back from 1986. And you know, I just remembered the guy who wrote all that music was queer. So it's not even that odd that there would be themes or elements that a queer person might pull out of his music. And you know, the same guy actually wrote the soundtrack, the score, for the next musical. And this is the one that really cracked my egg wide open. It was The Little Mermaid. Now, this story has always been queer. It was written by a gay man to express the longing that he had for the love that he could not access, the world that he could not be part of. And that same vibe always resonated with me from the time I was young. I remember watching that movie. So this came out in 1989. I was 8 years old. I remember watching it and just feeling like Ariel was a kindred spirit. I couldn't put my finger on the world that I was being denied, but I knew that I was not living as authentically as I could. A lot of people say that kids can't realize that they're trans. And some of us might not have that exact verbiage, but I was actually pretty close. I could verbalize by about this time that I think my mind works much more like a woman's than a man's. And if somebody had known what they were looking at little me, you know, somebody might have realized that I was probably trans and could have steered me in that direction. But alas, I had to figure all that out for myself over many, many years. But now I'm going to share this song. And as you listen to it, I'm sure you've heard it before. We all have. But just try to imagine you are a pre-transition trans person. And just see how this song hits if you can put those lenses on. So this is Part of Your World from the Little Mermaid soundtrack from 1989.
Maybe there is something the matter with me. I just don't see how a world that makes such wonderful things could be bad.
Look at this stuff. Isn't it neat? Wouldn't you think my collection's complete? Wouldn't you think I'm the girl who has everything? Look at this trove, treasures untold. How many wonders can one cavern hold? Looking around here, you think, sure, she's got everything. I've got gadgets and gizmos aplenty. I've got who's its and what's its galore. You want thingamabobs? I got 20. But who cares? No big deal. I want more. I want to be where the people are. I want to see them dancing, walking around on those, what do you call them? Oh, feet. Flipping your fins, you don't get too far. Legs are required for jumping, dancing, strolling along down a, what's that word again? Street. Up where they walk, up where they run, up where they stay all day in the sun, wandering free. Wish I could be part of that world. What would I give if I could live out of these waters? What would I pay to spend a day warm on the sand? Betcha on land, they understand that they don't reprimand their daughters. Bright young women, sick of swimming, ready to stand. I'm ready to know what the people know. Ask them my questions and get some answers. What's a fire and why does it, what's the word, burn? When's it my turn? Wouldn't I love to explore that shore up above? Out of the sea.
All right. That was Part of Your World from the Little Mermaid soundtrack. And I'm running ahead of schedule here. I didn't know exactly how long it would take me to ramble out everything I've said. So I'm going to pull forward just a little bit before we do the last song and tell you what I'm up to right now. This morning, as I'm recording this, I was actually at Parliament, went down to the Beehive, because I had submitted a statement on the impending Immigration Enhanced Risk Management Amendment Bill. And when I submitted my written statement, I checked the little box and said, I'd be willing to speak, you know, in front of people if you wanted me to. And then they sent me the invite. So that's what I did this morning. And I think to fill up some time here, I'm just going to read out the full statement. I thought I had 10 minutes, but they only gave me 5, so I kind of had to rush through. Now, I'm going to commit to record my full statement. My name is Rochelle Zettelmeyer. I'm a transgender woman from the United States, and I'm currently seeking asylum here in Aotearoa, New Zealand. Today, I would like to offer a perspective on what this bill looks like from this side of the immigration system. From the position of someone who came here because I needed safety and who is now questioning whether the system wants to see me as a person to be protected or a risk to be managed. And that distinction matters. When you are seeking asylum, you are already living inside uncertainty. You do not know what your future will look like. You do not know whether the place you fled will keep getting worse or what might happen to those you left behind. You do not know whether the country you ran to will recognize the danger that you ran from. Every letter, every appointment, every policy change can feel like the ground moving under your feet. And this bill moves the ground in unsettling ways. I find the proposed social media standards to be particularly unsettling. Not only is social media how millions and millions of people connect around the globe, but it's also a primary avenue for people to learn that their own situation is not normal, not acceptable, and that they should do something about it. Perhaps that they even can do something about it. But it's also my career. My online presence as your favorite transbian auntie is not a hobby. It's my work. It's how I earn income, how I build community, how I advocate, and how people know me. I run public-facing social media pages as my full-time career, and my identity as a trans woman is not separate from that work. It is visible every day. That matters because one of the more Orwellian things about this bill is the possibility that public speech, media attention, or social media activity could be treated as suspicious when it comes from an asylum seeker. For some people, being public is optional. For some, that ship has already sailed. Either way, publicity is also part of our safety net. When marginalized people are threatened, visibility can be dangerous, but silence always is. We speak because we are trying to survive, because we are trying to document what is happening, because we are trying to find community, and because we refuse to disappear. A refugee protection system needs to understand that. If an asylum seeker posts publicly about fear, discrimination, politics, gender, safety, or human rights, that should not automatically be seen as performance. For many of us, that is simply what living honestly looks like. Visibility should not be treated as evidence of bad faith. I don't want a system where I have to choose between protecting my asylum credibility and continuing my career. I don't want a system where desperate people learn that the safest thing to do is become silent, because silence never serves the oppressed, only the oppressors. I understand that immigration systems need rules. I understand that governments need tools to respond to genuine harm. I'm not asking New Zealand to have no borders or standards or enforcement. What I am asking is that enforcement not become the organizing principle of the whole system. Because when the system is designed around suspicion, vulnerable people feel that first. The expanded ID powers raise a sharp concern in this context. On paper, they may look like technical enforcement tools, but in real life, suspicion does not fall evenly. People are suspected because of how they look, how they sound, where they're from, how they dress, how nervous they seem, whether their documents are complicated, or whether their body and paperwork line up neatly. For a trans person, documents can be very complicated. Names, gender markers, presentation, and official identity do not always line up in the way a bureaucratic system expects. For an asylum seeker, documents may be missing, expired, dangerous to obtain, or tied to a government that person fears, perhaps even a government that is actively hostile towards them. And for autistic or neurodivergent people, being stopped and questioned by officials can be overwhelming in ways that may be misread as evasive or suspicious. And that is not a small thing. That is how people who have done nothing wrong can suddenly feel unsafe in ordinary life. And when people feel unsafe approaching authorities, they disappear from view. They do not report exploitation or violence. They avoid healthcare and institutions. They avoid asking for help. They avoid the system having an accurate understanding of the life they lead. The same problem appears in the proposal affecting asylum seekers who withdraw claims. People's lives do not pause while they are in the asylum system. People fall in love and get married. People are offered work and become part of communities. Sometimes another lawful pathway becomes more appropriate than continuing through a protection claim. And that should be a good thing. If someone has a genuine partnership pathway, or a skilled work pathway, or some other lawful way to remain and contribute, the system should be able to assess that fairly. Who benefits from locking someone into the most difficult path they could be on? That is what makes this lockout feel so irrational. It treats ordinary human life as suspicious. It turns love, work, and settling in into problems. And practically, it risks making backlogs worse. If people who might otherwise withdraw claims are forced to stay in the asylum system, that consumes resources that could be used for people who still need protection decisions. That is not good administration, not good resource management. That is bureaucracy generating enough red tape to hang itself. This is why I described the bill in my written submission as self-defeating, and it is doubly so if one looks to the future. New Zealand is an aging country. Young native Kiwis are leaving in large numbers for opportunities elsewhere, but communities need people. Teachers, nurses, doctors, clerks, janitors, bus drivers. Economies need customers. Governments need taxpayers. I do not believe asylum seekers should have to prove our human value through economic usefulness. People deserve safety and dignity simply because they are human beings who draw breath. But even on practical terms, New Zealand cannot afford to make itself more hostile towards people who want to come and build lives here. Some people come as skilled migrants. Some come as students, some as partners, some come as refugees or asylum seekers. Those categories matter legally, but they do not define the whole of what a person can become. They do not limit what a person can contribute. I came here because I needed safety, but I also came here as a person with a marriage and a career. I have skills, values, and a desire to contribute to a society that still believes in pluralism and human dignity. I am not a threat to New Zealand's future. I am someone hoping to be a part of it. That is why I ask the committee to remember this. The people affected by this bill are not abstractions. We are not just files, risks, categories, or compliance problems. We are people trying to survive the most frightening period of our lives and build something stable on the other side. We are also teenagers. We are also children. And those groups will be affected by these laws as well. In 2026, are you seriously trying to propose that teenagers are not allowed to talk about their lives on social media without threatening the asylum case of their entire family? And certainly, we want children and their families to feel safe approaching authorities if someone is being exploited or abused. We have to consider everyone that these laws will affect. If New Zealand wants people to trust the immigration system, to report exploitation, work lawfully, to participate openly, and belong to society, then the system must offer more than enforcement. It must offer fairness and safeguards. It must offer a believable path toward belonging. As mentioned, I came here from the United States, a country with a quite famous track record on immigration enforcement. I am very familiar with where the road of expanding these powers can lead. It never starts where the U.S. is now. It begins with powers described as technical, limited, reasonable, necessary. But once suspicion becomes embedded in the system, those powers are always seeking to expand. Communities learn to fear ordinary contact with the state. People stop reporting harm. Families disappear from public life. The people most affected are rarely the people with the most power to object. I am not saying New Zealand is the United States. I came here because I believe New Zealand can choose differently. But choosing differently requires recognizing the warning signs early, before fear gets baked into policy and infrastructure. So my request is simple. Please recommend that this bill not proceed. If it does proceed, please remove or substantially narrow the expanded ID powers. Please remove the asylum withdrawal lockout. Please retain humanitarian appeal rights. Please ensure that public advocacy, political expression, media visibility, or social media work are not treated as evidence of bad faith. A country can protect the integrity of its immigration system without treating vulnerable people as threats. A country can respond to genuine risk without teaching whole communities to fear contact with the state. A country can have rules without losing compassion. I came to New Zealand because I believe this country could choose that better path, would choose that better path, and I'm asking you to choose it now. I was very, very nervous as I sat in front of this select committee and read my statement. First, I was rushing to try to get through it. I'm wordy. That's okay. I know this. But it was a cool experience. Coming from the U.S., regular people do not have access to elected politicians at the parliament or equivalent level. There is no possibility that I could have spoken to people about an issue like this in the U.S. and have it be people that might have actually done something. So that's something really cool. And I don't know if enough Kiwis appreciate how personable your government officials still are compared to other places. But that was a little segue there to chew up some time. But it'll dovetail nicely with my final song. Because, of course, having, you know, run from somewhere and open a setup elsewhere, that's a dream, right? So this last track is Don't Dream It from the Rocky Horror Picture Show. It's a little snippet. That's all the way back from 1975. And once again, just in case you can't make out Tim Curry's lyrics, which, you know, you should be able to, but the very opening of the song is what stuck with me. The opening lyrics are, "Whatever happened to Faye Ray, that delicate satin-draped frame, as it clung to her thigh, how I started to cry, because I wanted to be dressed just the same." For years, that line, that verse, would just pop into my head completely out of nowhere without provocation. And I would sit and I would sing it in my head, and I would feel kind of sad, feel that longing that's being described in those lyrics. And once again, as a younger person, I could not put my finger on what was making me feel that way. And as ever, I did eventually figure it out. So I'm going to send us out today with this track from the Rocky Horror Picture Show. This is Don't Dream It from 1975. Thank you.
happened to Fay Wray? That delicate satin-draped frame as it clung to her thigh, how I started to cry, 'cause I wanted to be dressed just the same. Give yourself over to absolute pleasure. Swim the warm waters of sins of the flesh. Erotic nightmares beyond any measure. And sensual daydreams to treasure forever. Can't you just see?
That program was brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard. Thanks New Zealand On Air for funding accessmedia.nz.